He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Yes, and Jay is off driving this morning, so he couldn't be with us on this show. But we are in the middle of a beautiful, or maybe near the end of an absolutely beautiful week of weather and fall colors around our driving area. And anybody who was out and about this weekend was treated to, I think, a delightful picture of color and vistas from Maine, a lot of the driving roads around our northwest corner, both country town roads and routes like Route 22, Route 23 in New York State, Route 41 in Connecticut and Massachusetts, and the like, and probably even down into the middle of Connecticut, although I wasn't in that area. But it brings up to mind the joys of driving vehicles. When there is something wonderful to look at, along with the road, of course. You should always keep your focus on the road, but if you are lucky enough to be a passenger in one of these vehicles, you can get to look at the vistas that you have been able to see over this past week in October. Be it as it may, one of the other things about color is it diminishes the sight capability of many people who are driving and are trying to deal with people who are biking and or walking on the roads in these times of color, because the color can camouflage a lot of dress colors. It can camouflage people on bicycles in funny sort of ways, unless they have very bright strobe lights on their bikes, which I hardly recommend for bikers, because it is very hard. We talk about this on this show all the time, Jay and I do, and visibility of seeing things other than cars on the road come into play when the roads are shared by bikers, walkers. And bikers are both motorcyclists and bicyclists.
But also e-bikers. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Excuse me?
Also e-bikers. I said I'm sorry to interrupt.
Well, yeah, e-bikers. Yeah, there are electric bikes out now, and I know there's a rental place in West Cornwall. I have not gone down to see what they actually rent, but they rent e-bikes, and so do a couple other places up in Massachusetts. And I have talked to a couple of people who have now added e-bikes to their inventory of vehicles that they can scoot around on or drive around on or ride around on the roads. And e-bikes are just a interesting supportive way of moving yourself on a bicycle. Basically, they do not necessarily supplant the pedals, although you can go on an e-bike without using the pedals for a certain amount of time on the battery charge. But normally, you are pedaling the bike, and you have various ways of supplementing your pedal power with electric power in the form of different modes, actually, on these e-bikes. I'm getting a little sidetracked from what I was getting to, which is visibility on the roads.
Well, there's a reason. I didn't mean to sidetrack you, but I've noticed that several e-bike users that just are going up the middle of the road.
And you think they're all e-bikes? Yeah, because you would know if they're not pedaling, they would be on an e-bike if it was moving along at a pace. They do not go very fast. Downhill, they'll go fast on a coastal situation, unless they are maybe charging themselves with some kind of friction braking. But I have not seen that happen, Jill, so I can't support your comments, although I'm sure it's there. And if they're on the local two-lane roads, a Vespa just went by my office as I'm broadcasting from there, and those are the other form of motorized vehicles that are increasingly prevalent, or not prevalent, but increasingly added to vehicles going along our roads. I did talk, and I'm getting sidetracked too, and where I was heading, and I'll try to get back to it. I bought a moped over in Massachusetts this summer, and I have had a wonderful summer of riding that around, and the Vespa is a form of a moped. There is a fine line between moped transportation devices and motorcycle transportation devices. And it comes in the form of the size of the engine, which is limited to around 50 cc's of displacement or less for non-licensed requirement power limitations to own and ride a moped. That is, you do not need a motorcycle license to ride a moped if it is under a 50 cc engine. And this is Massachusetts. I'm not sure whether it's similar in this particular detail in Connecticut and maybe even New York. But in any event, for vehicles, two-wheel vehicles with motors on them of less than 50 cc's, and I think my horsepower rating is at 1 horsepower or less for the moped I bought, one does not need a motor vehicle license, well, a motorcycle license, that is, to ride a moped. You do have to register them, I believe, in Connecticut as well as Massachusetts. And but they go around comfortably around 30 miles per hour, though mine will get up to 50 if I want to really push it. And it's not recommended for engine durability to do that, but it's supposed to be limited to around 30 miles an hour on the spec sheet to avoid running afoul of the law of when a moped is too much like a motorcycle in terms of, I guess, performance. But with all these ways of traveling on a roadway around, it is more than ever important, and along with the fall colors, it is my opinion, and this is probably an early safety tip for a show like this, and people aren't doing it, of course, walkers included, wearing very bright upper body clothing in the form of neon type of vests or shirts or other that might stand out and make set you apart from the background in which you might be moving. So enough on that. But the other area I wanted to go to is rapid transit, a discussion about rapid transit vehicles that one of the magazines I get, which is Motor Trend, highlighted in their latest issue. And it's all about the increased performance of vehicles way down on the cost line and size line, away from the Porsches and the Ferraris and the Aston Martins and the high-performance Corvettes and all that, because vehicles that are smaller and have heretofore mostly been constructed with economically performing engines, that is, high-mileage rated engines, have not known to produce a lot of power behind some of those engines. Now, there are lots of exceptions for those listeners who are up on all this topic, but what's happening is that the manufacturers are now beginning to put performance engines into very small packaged vehicles. And because they're a lot lighter than the heavier vehicles aforementioned, they can be very fun to drive, especially on country roads, because they are lighter in weight, they are smaller in size, and they therefore are more agile in many of the driving situations which we happen to enjoy in our listening and broadcast area. To that end, we are talking about Honda Civics, Mazda CX-3, CX-5s. We are talking about Hyundai Velostars, Mini Coopers, and similar size vehicles that are now being stuffed with high-performance engines, better suspension systems, sport seats to hold you in place while you're probably going around corners faster than you normally would think of taking with non-performance-oriented cars. But this is a batch of vehicles, and there are many more than I've just mentioned that are coming online with are coming onto the road with high-performance engines. And I will sort of talk about engines that have horsepower ranges of 175 horsepower and up, and they're mostly in four-cylinder configurations, but there are some six-cylinder configurations as well. And, in fact, it's actually going into the larger three-row SUVs, too. They highlighted specifically the Ford and the Dodge Durango, the Ford Explorer, the new Ford Explorer, and the Dodge Durango as two three-row sports utility vehicles and people-carrying vehicles that are actually a lot larger than the batch I was just sort of talking about. But they're coming in with high-performance versions of their V6 and or V8 engines and being touted as being very fast, high-speed cruisers, and even capable of being fairly agile in twisty roads. So this is coming on stream for people who don't have the budgets for the Ferraris and the Aston Martins levels of cars and all those like them. And they're priced in anywhere from as low as around $30,000 at some levels. The Mazda CX-3, for example, is, I think, around $28,000 to $29,000. That is a fun little hatch, which I commented on many shows ago as an alternative to the VW GTI, which has been a known hot hatchback for decades. In any event, the price ranges start from a little below $30,000 for the particular one I mentioned, all the way up into $75,000 or more, which are starting to approach Porsche costs, and they don't equal the Porsche costs, but they are starting to approach that level. But they're still a lot more economical to run in general and service in general than the exotics that I've been talking about, you know, comparing them to, which have been around for years as high-performance vehicles. I will go to the Jeep Cherokee, which is not as high-performance as some of these other ones that are being talked about in this magazine, in this particular issue, but I happen to have a Jeep Cherokee, which I've mentioned on this show before, with the four-cylinder turbo engine. It happens to be 271 horsepower. It's apparently a derivative of the Alfa Romeo Stevio line of vehicles, which uses a variant of the same engine. And I have to tell you, with its 8-speed automatic transmission, it is a very enjoyable version of the Jeep Cherokee to be able to own and drive at a relatively affordable cost, in that you can find them with this engine in the $30,000 range. And as we have talked many times on this show, the mid-$30,000 range is about where the average selling price of vehicles are in the U.S. right now. And they've been creeping upward for the last 3 or 4 years, starting from maybe just around $29,000. And I think they're now hitting $34,000 to $35,000 overall average of all the vehicles sold in the U.S. So if you can get something with a performance engine and you that you particularly like to drive, and you particularly like to drive as well, there are a lot of vehicles out there now that you can enjoy going to test drive and seeing whether there's one that will fit your feelings of something really fun to drive at a very affordable cost. I don't know where I'm going to go next. Jay's not here to jump in and comment on any of this stuff, but
to challenge you?
What?
To challenge you?
Yeah, to challenge me. But
all right, then I would like to ask you: are you watching any sports?
I'm watching soccer. I am not watching football at the moment.
The reason I'm asking is because, are you seeing any adverts?
Well, when I do tune into them, I'm seeing the usual year-end truck adverts. I see,
the new Sonata?
Really, and I'm seeing tire adverts. But I cannot recall a lot of adverts, except when I see something like a pickup truck being advertised and special package options selling for like $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 off if you buy and take delivery on one of these vehicles by the end of a particular month. And I think it's all around like before November now, and it'll go into December and all that. But it's all about sales wars as far as I'm concerned. Pickup trucks are changing rapidly. I don't know whether it's going to be a successful change. We talked to Jay and I talked on this show about this a few shows ago about the electric pickup trucks that are now being rather rapidly developed, although they haven't really come to the sales. They haven't come to the floor of a dealership near you yet because they haven't really started production. But we talked, I think, a week or two ago about the Ford F-150 is being rapidly developed. Chevrolet is not far behind. And Fiat Chrysler will be catching up as well. But Ford is getting most of the noise right now as a competing line of trucks through the Rivian, which we have talked about in the past, and some other other named startups that have yet to actually get production factories going. But we talked about how the bragging rights of between Chrysler, Dodge, the Rams, and the Chevrolet, GMC, Silverados, and Yukons, and the Ford F-150s has been an ongoing annual race to the end as far as sales go. Ford is still on top. But now they're putting production versions of high-performance versions of their trucks. Ford has had it to itself for the most part with the Raptor for the last 3 or 4 years. Dodge has come out with a 702-horsepower Ram-powered pickup truck, which I think is just going into production, and I have yet to see one on a dealer's lot. And Chevrolet is also following with a sport performance version of their Silverados, and I think GMC will add a version to their line, too. But the electric truck is coming. Ford certainly thinks it's going to be a major player in the contracting business. I don't know whether that's going to be true or not. It's probably going to have a huge battery pack underneath the pickup bed and wherever they lay the battery outs there, battery layouts there. One of the things they're going to have to do with all these battery packs is have them absolutely waterproofed from ability of having water penetration get into the electrical circuitry and the battery packs themselves. Is they're going to be slung underneath the frames or on the frames of pickup trucks, because when any car that's got an electric battery pack on it, it's going to have to be thoroughly waterproof, and they will be. But you certainly won't want to drive through flooded roads with some of these electric vehicles in the future, I would guess, unless they are absolutely certifiably waterproofed beyond reality or beyond conceptual capability. If you are in some of these flood-prone areas that we are seeing as the weather patterns change, and in the low-lying areas where flooded roads start becoming a prevalent problem in coastal states and therefore cities. The electric pickup truck will require, again, charging stations both at your point of business as well as somewhere nearby if you're traveling to a longer-distance job situation. It'll be interesting to watch the electric world get into the reality situation of having a lot of options for people to look at as we go towards 2025, which is what I think the timeline is going to be for seeing a lot of additional electric vehicles, both trucks and cars, start crowding the parking lots of vehicles along with the gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles we've been living with for decades and centuries. To that end, I have yet to see a convertible electric-powered convertible being designed. I bring this up because I have been noting the number of convertible vehicles on the roads during this beautiful fall season, and it brought to mind whether or not there was going to be an electric convertible. Tesla doesn't seem to have one on the drawing boards, and I haven't seen it in any other line either that I know of, although Porsche may have one up in the Taycan area. There may be a coupe or a convertible version coming on that. But convertibles are still going to be a fun although a minor part of the overall vehicle sales going forward. It's nice to see some manufacturers keeping the convertible lines active in their lineups. Ford only has a Mustang. Camaro has a convertible in the Chevrolet line. But you have to go to something like Audi and BMW and Mercedes to see convertibles in those upper-level lines of cars, manufactured cars, as opposed to the domestics, which have notably been out of the convertible line other than for a couple of one or two lines, as I just mentioned, for many years. Safety tips. Visibility is my safety tip. In order for visibility to be high online, you have to spend a lot of time focusing on the driving situation. I had an incident this morning coming to my office to do this show where I was stopped at a Y-shaped stop line where one highway divides into two directions. The sun was shining right on the vehicles coming up the hill where they had to make a decision to go left or right. And a Chevrolet pickup, for example, was coming up the hill, and I could not tell whether it had its signal light on to go left or right at the intersection as I was waiting to pull onto the road into Lakeville. And it turned out it did have its signal light on, but you could not see what direction it was intending to take because of the sun blinding the light situation on the pickup truck. To that end, that is a common occurrence besides the fact that if you don't have amber lights turning signals on your vehicles in the front, and you have, or you'd, even if you do, if they're not brighter, they're tucked into the same packaging as the headlight package of lights on the front end of cars. They have with the daytime running lights also shining during the daytime, of course. You can sometimes not see those signal lights clearly in certain light conditions. So when you are stopped at an intersection and you have a road dividing in front of you and the light is wrong, you should not attempt to venture out onto the oncoming traffic until you know for sure that they might not be crossing your path as you start up from a stopped position.
All right, and I've got a quick question. This is an old driver's thing, but who has the right-of-way at a four-way or a Y-shape?
Oh, I wish Jay were here because we've had some discussions. It used to be somebody was coming in from the right. Now I think it's the person who arrives at a four-way ahead of all the other traffic. That starts the right-of-way situation. But after that, I still, when I come to a roundabout, I look to my right because that's where I would most likely be turning. You go around a roundabout counterclockwise in all cases in the U.S., as far as I know. So you are naturally going to look to your right to see if anybody's coming in from the right-hand side of the roundabout. Once you get into the roundabout, you have a certain right to go around that roundabout, and people, other drivers coming up to the roundabout should be pausing to let you get around in front of them. There are yield signs as well on these roundabouts, but I don't know how many drivers really know. I think caution is the best way to set your course going into a roundabout. And if a car is coming in from the right, I have tended to let that car enter the roundabout unless I was already well into it. And then they're supposed to let me get around in front of them before they come in behind me. I don't know if I've answered your question or the listener's question adequately, but
we'll leave it there, and we will check with Dr. DeMarkin when he next reappears,
which hopefully will be next week.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm going.